Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with my awesome, awesome guest, Ronald J. Rossman. How are you doing, Ronald?
I'm doing great, Jonathan. Thank you for having me on.
I'm doing great, too. Do you prefer Ron or Ronald?
I prefer Ron. Thank you.
Okay, good. Now we got that out. I prefer Jonathan, actually, which is weird because a lot of people are like, oh, you prefer Jonathan or John? And just because there's not that many Jonathans, but there's definitely, you know, and there's...
It's far more sophisticated. I like it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So we're going to begin in the beginning. How did you get into making movies?
So that's a great question. Originally, I was an author, and I have two self-published science fiction titles. The Lost Road to Hope and The Crux. And it's very expensive to self-publish, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So when I was working on my third book called The Lost Legacy, which is a vampire saga, I came up with this brilliant idea that instead of creating another novel, I would create a screenplay based off of the trilogy I had outlined and put it on Facebook. And so with the help of some amazing friends of mine who worked for nothing, we began the arduous task of, you know, translating the story into a screenplay. And then because I knew we had a very low budget and production values were not going to be where I wanted them to be exactly, I thought a good hook would be if every episode was filmed live.
Mm-hmm.
So every episode for the first 2 years of the Dusk series, which it became, was filmed live, which was insane. And as each year progressed, I was getting better and better at writing and directing and kind of putting everything together. By the third season, because we were getting a lot more views based on the replays, we went to strictly post-production episodes. And then after that, I said, you know what, this is what I want to do. I want to create films. I want to write screenplays. I want to do independent films. So I started investing my own money, which is not a very wise idea, but unfortunately when you're starting out, and of course The Devil's Daughter was born. I figured the best way to start out being an unknown, even though we had about 41 episodes of Dusk out there, I think it's 41 or 44, was to do a fan film where there was a recognizable character that mm-hmm. would bring attention to our page, to what we were doing. And this way, the next project, we could have something that, you know, would pull from that fan base. And so that's why we did the fan film first. And I love filmmaking. I love the entire process. It is, for me, the greatest creative outlet. So that's where it all started and where we're at.
That's great. I can't wait to get into the fan film stuff with you because I have a lot to say on that stuff. But let's talk more about Dusk, because that was obviously your first baby, you know, mm-hmm. And everything. And so was it sort of like, because were these based on your like original novels or anything?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they're based on the series is called The Lost Legacy. It was going to be a 3-book series. I love Underworld and I love The Godfather. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to make this story where the underworld, the actual criminal underworld, was controlled by creatures of the underworld, being vampires and werewolves, and kind of made this story where the government knows about it, and in order to keep the peace, allows these creatures to run crime so that there's not a war between the supernatural and the natural worlds.
Can people buy the Lost Legacy series?
No, they can't, because it went strictly to screenplay. In fact, Jonathan, we're going to reboot the series and do the 3 movies based on the original story. So we're no longer doing Dust series. We're going to do 3 movies. Filming starts for the first one, we're hoping, in November of this year. And we'll have the first movie will be called Dust, The Lost Legacy. The second one will be called Dusk Eternal Moon. And the third one will be called Dust Darkness Will Fall. So that's our hope. And this way, because we had to make a lot of changes to the series with people dropping and last minute alterations that we had no choice to make. So I want to get back to the source material, because that was the love of that story, was that kind of really cool dynamic of organized crime with the vampires, and it was a family story, and it was about two brothers, one good, one evil. All those aspects I want to bring back the way they should have been in the first place.
So tell us a little bit about your novel writing originally. I think you say you actually wrote three original novels?
I have about nine unfinished novels, but I have two published.
Okay.
The first is The Lost Road to Hope, Don't Survive, Live. And that was based on my mom's three-year battle with cancer, which she lost. That's quite all right. It's been quite some time, and I appreciate that. She did not undergo chemo and lasted much longer than anybody would without chemo and radiation. And her motto was she didn't want to just survive with chemo. She, even if it was a shortened time, she wanted to live that out to the fullest without being encumbered by the effects of chemo and radiation. And so from that, I pulled this idea that too many times in our life, we kind of survive day to day. We don't really live. Going back to the Ferris Bueller, you know, you got to stop and smell the roses every now and then. Life moves pretty fast. You might miss it. So that's why it was The Lost Road to Hope, Don't Survive, Live. And what it is, a story of these cancer patients who survive this Lovecraftian style apocalypse, and they have to find out how to carry on. And in the process, they begin to change both as people and physically. So it's got a really cool kind of horror sci-fi twist to it with very original characters, very original monsters. I really enjoy it. It's still my favorite book to date, my favorite project to date, because it had so much spirit into it, and it was based on what my mom went through.
Oh, that's nice. Like that you're able to take something sort of negative and sad and turn it into something very positive and sort of heartfelt.
Yeah, and that I wanted to have a book where they, you know, there's not many stories where the cancer survivors are the actual heroes.
Right. But
I wanted to do something because my mom, when I watched her fight and how strong she was 70 years old when she was battling this. And the fact that she stayed so strong and stayed so diligent and was able to keep the use of her facilities and so forth for such a long time without any medicinal intervention as far as chemo, radiation, did have a surgery that was very successful. I said, I really want to capture that in the heroes of this book. And I pulled from experiences that I've had, people I've known, and then I just created some original characters. And I really wanted to make the characters genuine, authentic, gritty, people that you would bump into anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I was really proud of the fact that I feel I accomplished that. And I think the story is solid. It's a great story. A lot of times folks ask me, was I going to write a sequel to it? I would never do it because I think it would taint the original story. I think sometimes when you have a sequel, it actually ruins or contaminates the first film or the first book. So I really wanted to kind of stand alone because it was kind of like my launching board. So I wanted to kind of remain as itself.
Right. Wow. Very cool. So what was your second novel?
The second novel is called The Crux. And what I wanted to do is kind of mix Doctor Who, although I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan, but I've always enjoyed the mythos with the Avengers. With a horror element. So basically, in the story, all of our fears, our nightmares exist in this place called the Crux, and they're tangible creatures, some good, some evil. And the idea is to keep those creatures from the real world. And an event occurs where a breach happens, and those creatures begin to interfere with the human world, and a martial style hero called Ronan and his team attempt to stop that. And there's a large evil entity that's behind all of it. So it's got this really cool kind of superhero / horror / sci-fi feel to it. And the majority of the heroes are women, which was a huge challenge for me because I wanted to write very authentic women characters. So it took a lot of research. I had some great folks who I was able to kind of pick their brains to make sure I was capturing the female essence. And from those who've read it, they said they feel like I did that. So that was a huge accomplishment because writing a female character, they're far more complex than male characters, because you and I are males, so we know what males go through, but we don't know what females go through. We can only see it from the, as an audience. And so it really takes a lot to make sure you're, and you're never going to capture it fully. But I think I didn't want to create a caricature or an archetype. I wanted to create actual, you know, genuine female characters. And even though they're, you know, obviously some of them are vampires and some of them are psychotic fairies, but I wanted them to really capture, you know, the female essence. So I was, I'm really proud of that one. It's a large book. It's, I think it's almost 700 pages. So it's,
oh, wow.
It's huge. There was a sequel intended for it. I never got a chance to write it. I hopefully someday will, because it leaves off with a cliffhanger, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a trilogy, you know.
It was originally going to be a 7-book series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was going to try to create my own kind of universe with it. But again, it was, self-publishing is a very expensive proposition. And so the money ran out and I couldn't go any further at that time.
I'm always fascinated by universes and, you know, and art, you know. Obviously, I'm a huge, MCU fan. So I like, you know, when you mentioned the Avengers, I was like, that's cool. When you do that. But like, I'm absolutely enthralled by it, because ever since I was a kid, I guess I was into like TGIF, you know, and they'd have those little spinoffs, you know, where like Urkel would meet like Stephanie from Full House or something, you know?
Yep.
And so I always like was fascinated by like, oh my God, these two worlds are meeting each other, you know? Yeah. And then, you know, when you read comics, you see it all the time. You read Game of Thrones, you see that kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it's a cool like little thing. So it's interesting to see where other people, especially on a low budget side. And so you kind of did that. You definitely did that with Dusk, you know, right? You created your own like little universe with it.
And what's interesting about Dusk is actually there is a crossover between Dusk and the Crux that was never supposed to happen, but it happened out of necessity. And I just ran with it. So if people read the Crux and then see the Dusk series, the connection as the series continues is evident. But I think with shared universe, it can be a good and bad thing. I think overused, it can lose its impact. But I think done in a more subtle way, it can really make fans go nuts. Except for the large blockbusters, Marvel obviously has really done a great job, like you said, of creating this massive universe. And keeping it fresh and keeping it lively. Now we have the multiverse that's about to happen. Star Wars has done it with The Mandalorian, which I think saved Star Wars after the three sequels kind of really hit the fandom hard. But I do think that sometimes you can very easily get too reliant upon it. It's kind of like the time travel trope. Or, you know, the soap operas, the evil twin trope, they can be overused very easily.
Right. And I'm sort of like weirded out, like, because I kind of agree. There's a lot of people saying right now that Marvel's kind of ruining a lot of these things because they're doing too much. You know, there's too many projects, like it almost seems like every month there's a new Marvel project out. And which is good. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm excited for Moon Knight, but in the same sense, it's just like, oh my goodness, you know, there's Moon Knight and then there's Doctor Strange and then there's Thor and then there's Ms. Marvel, you know what I mean? Like way too much all of a sudden. And so like when they were only doing like 3 or 4 movies a year, now they've got 3 or 4 movies a year plus like 4 TV shows, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one of the gets overcrowded.
When I was, I'm quite a bit older than you. I just turned 50. But the thrill of the Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy, was the wait for the films to come.
Mm-hmm.
It was that anticipation. In today's society, where you have TikTok and Instagram, where content has to be constant, unfortunately, I don't know if Marvel or Star Wars could survive following the old methodology, because take Black Widow, for instance. I think Black Widow got hurt really badly because it came out so late because of COVID. Mm-hmm. I think Black Widow would have had a larger impact had it come out when it was supposed to. But it's kind of a necessary evil, and I agree with you. It begins to dilute not just the overall story, but the characters. And at what point, I mean, you're topping. At what point do you hit that maximum, you know, tipping point where it just becomes rote? You know, now we have the multiverse. Well, what happens after the multiverse? You know, you have the Mandalorian story, which is taking us into the future of the Star Wars universe, but we know what that future is. So there's only so much you can do with it.
Right.
And then eventually, I don't think that that comic movies will ever hit a point where people be tired of them because they're just fun. But if you look at the first 10 years or 20 years of Marvel, the first films, and you look at the new ones, it feels like Marvel Lite. Like the mm-hmm. first, they were so epic, those movies, building that legacy. And now everything else feels kind of like the spinoff, you know, Urkel going to Step by Step or Urkel going to Full House. It doesn't feel like it's standing on its own. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I like the series. I liked WandaVision because it was a story of grief and the stage of grief. You have to take it for that. I know a lot of people hate that series, but you have to take it for what it was.
I enjoyed it.
I thought it was beautifully done. I really did. I wasn't wild about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I thought it was kind of a blasé story. I think they could have done more, especially exploring the Black Captain America. I really would have liked to have seen that storyline as opposed to what they did.
But yeah, you know what I think the problem with that movie, that show was like they were doing two or three things instead of focusing on one.
One really and, good. It was the Spider-Man principle. Yeah.
Yeah. So the big Spider-Man 3. Yeah. Well, the big problem with it is like, what is it? John Walker, you know, which they introduced, you know, and then you follow his storyline. And then it almost seems like his storyline kind of just disappears for a bit and then comes back. And I'm just like, you know, I understand because at the end of it, they were setting up for US Agent, right. You know, which he's going to become and he's probably going to be part of the Dark Avengers. Right. Which is a plan for them ahead of time. But the problem is you put that in that move, that show where it's really supposed to be all about will Sam not take the reins right. of being the new Captain America. And then you put a lot of the race stuff in there, which was really good. I liked all that and the politicalness of it. But if you had just put that in there from the very beginning, instead of put all this stuff about, you know, John Walker, you know, and everything, you know what I mean? Like, it would have been a much better cohesive story. Like, just concentrate basically on Sam and Bucky, you know, and not this other stuff.
The boat scene is a prime example. That whole episode was a filler episode. They could have spent that one episode could have healed all the wounds because you mm-hmm. could have tied together. You can't introduce such a large element like the first Black Captain America and then handle it as a footnote.
Right.
You can't bring in US agents and not explore that fully. And the whole idea of the sympathetic terrorist with that girl really kind of was offensive to me because she was killing innocent people. She wasn't a good guy. And even though she had a valid point with the whole transition from the snap, you know, they were trying to glamorize it. And I felt like that was a fail. And then I felt like, I agree with you. I think they try to do too much. They should have focused on one aspect. And then if they're going to make it a series every season, do a different aspect. But mm-hmm. I think they tried to do the Spider-Man 3 thing and the original Spider-Man 3 where they just put too much into one box and it just didn't fit right. It was not cohesive.
Okay, so I'm friends with somebody who's not in the film business that was talking to me about Spider-Man No Way Home. And you've seen it, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I don't want to.
Three times.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, perfect. So he got very confused by the end. Spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home, if you have not seen it, either you can skip ahead or, you know, or... it's out. It's been available for a while. Like I'm not, you know, not saying this like right after it just came out. So you know, he was confused by the three Spider-Men, you know, like, why is there three Spider-Men, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I tried to explain the multiverse to him, and that just went right over his head. Like, he's just a normal, this is just a normal person that doesn't watch, you know, Marvel all the time, just watched it with his kid, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think a little bit that's going to be the problem, you know, with everything that's going to happen with Doctor. I told him, if you didn't enjoy that, you're going to hate Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Cause
that's where we talk about the universe building. It can be a good thing and a bad thing. And they're building such a massive, but you're right. If you don't like the comics, if you did not like the first two Tobey Maguire movies, which to this day, I think are the two best Spider-Man movies. If you didn't see the Andrew Garfield movies, you have no idea what's going on. And so, yeah, you're right. It becomes kind of cumbersome to the mainstream. That's like, well, this is cool, but how does it make sense?
Yeah. Or like, I mean, yeah. Like, why is there three Spider-Man there? And you know, and the thing is like, what is it? What's that movie or what's that show? There's a show on YouTube that's basically it's a pitch show. You know, the guy goes and pitches. I don't know if you watch this or not, but there's this this guy who pitches, and he kind of points out the flaws of different movies that are. So he's pitching Spider-Man No Way Home, and he's like, you know, oh, you know, this character, and the guy's like, I don't know who that is. And the guy's like, you got to go watch Spider-Man. You got to watch Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, then come back.
Right.
And then he's like, he comes back and then he starts telling me, he's like, he was in that movie. You know, he was, you know, right. Like it makes sense to him. But like, if you haven't watched those, you'll be like, why is Jamie Foxx, you know, playing this, you know what I mean? Like you'd be so confused. So you have to go in. You know, if you don't watch these movies, you gotta go in just like completely, you know, okay with whatever happens, you know,
right, kind of thing. And now with the series, you can't just go see a Marvel movie without, you have to see the series because they tie in.
Right.
Loki's going to be in multiverse, and you know, you've got Wanda's going to be in multiverse. So if you don't watch them, you remember when the Marvel had the one shots after the films, those little brief kind of things, a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer, right, that kind of stuff. Those were cool because they gave you something additional, but they weren't required reading. Right, now everything is required reading. So it does for you and I who are, you know, geeks and we love this stuff and we feed off this stuff, it's not a big deal. But if you're just like my wife who just enjoys a good movie where Iron Man was like awesome to her, but she was the same way. She's like, why is all this happening? And she watched the Tobey Maguire movies, but she's not following it as dogmatically as I am. So it does become cumbersome. And that's why I said you have to be careful with the universe building, because if you do too much, it dilutes the source material, it confuses the audience, and you end up doing the exact opposite of what you want. Instead of creating something epic, you create something epically bad.
Well, it's called transmedia. You know, that's the term for what basically all of what Marvel is doing, all of what DC is trying to do. And I'm going to get into that with you because we'll talk, because I know you just, you know, you did your own DC feature, you know, which is pretty freaking cool. Marvel has created a thing where they tie in everything as much. So, you know, you can read the comics, right? But the comics are set in basically a different universe anyway, you know, so those are completely different. So then you take the Marvel Cinematic Universe and you say, okay, now this TV show is connected to these movies. But sometimes you don't need to watch it to understand what's going on. It just like would be really cool because you'd be like, oh crap, that's how like such and such got that, you know, thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it'd be an added little bonus. But then sometimes they are required, like you said, like when the ending pops up and you see, you've seen Eternals, right?
I have, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, at the end they have Star Fox. So
yeah.
Star Fox sets up or whatever. So you now know Thanos's brothers come to whatever. Right. So like the point is that there are you know, when you start watching a Marvel cinematic universe, you got to watch everything. You got to be careful, you know, like something's going to tie into something else later.
Have to watch all the end credits. All of it has to come into play. And that's where I think Marvel has to be careful, because if they do too much, they're going to end up hurting themselves. And again, I think they're responding to a very content-driven society, but I think that's going to hit a max too, because eventually you run out of stuff to put out there. There's only so many cat videos, so many mom and daughter dancing, so many stupid pranks. What really bothers me now is, I don't know if you've seen them, those like scripted pranks where the girl's got her back turned for a good 5 minutes while the husband does some trick, or the soldier comes home and his wife is cheating and he's in the box and it takes 15 minutes for him to surprise. And it's just so bad and so poorly made. And yet they're being watched millions and millions of times. For someone like me, it's frightening, because you begin to wonder, is quality going to be replaced by quantity?
Well, okay. Good question. And I like that. And I think that's a really good point, because you watch TikTok, right? You know, that's
I try not to, but I do catch myself every now and then. Yes.
Well, I mean, and I hate to say this, but Dusk and everything else that you do after that and everything has got to go, got to become TikTok things, because, you know, I don't know if you saw the one, a couple ones that we did with Stro for our TikTok stuff. We did stuff with your buddy Stro, who you've worked with on a couple times. And who doesn't? Yeah. We all love him. You know, he's the nicest guy in the world. So we've done TikToks, you know, or whatever. And we didn't want to originally, because, you know, just like you probably, we don't, you get kind of sucked watching like 1 to 3 minute TikToks, and sometimes it's really awful and bad and, you know, cheap and stuff. And then sometimes it's actually pretty funny and good. And the point I wanted to make with that was Spider-Man. When Spider-Man started coming out, there was when Spider-Man was coming out, they did like the TikToks with the girl Betty Brant.
Betty Brant, who's doing the newscast. Yes.
Did you see those TikToks?
I actually didn't, because I don't watch TikTok as much. I watch a lot more YouTube, but I didn't see those. I'd heard of them, but I didn't watch any of them.
Okay.
So, but I definitely had heard that they were doing that to kind of promote the film, which I think is, I mean, marketing wise, it is genius, because you're attracting the young generation who is watching TikTok. So, I mean,
exactly.
you got to go where the audience is.
Well, I mean, and it can continue the storyline, you know, that, and they're able to bring in, all these different actors. Even Tom Holland came in for a cameo bit where he was being interviewed by Betty. And I thought, this is fucking genius. You know, Marvel is doing something very smart. I wish that they would do another thing that I think is really being big now, which is podcasting. Marvel does do podcasts, but they do podcasts that are not on the MCU podcasts.
Yeah.
If they continue a storyline from the Eternals, you know, or whatever, and if people want to listen to it, they could, you know, but like they have like, you know, like what happened afterwards or whatever, and then that leads to more stuff. That's what we're trying to do in our universe that we've created, you know. Mm-hmm. Try to do podcasts and, you know, and web series and, you know, all that fun stuff, because that's what that right now, content period, you know, getting that out there.
Yeah, and you're 100% right. We're in the process of transferring stuff to TikTok to draw people into the film. And when Dusk comes out, we'll do an entire TikTok promotion, because it's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
But it is, if you're wanting to reach that demographic, the 30 and up watch it because they're bored. Mm-hmm. But the 20, I would say the 25 and under, and I would go up that high, 25 and under are watching it because that's their main form of entertainment. And so You are correct. Jonathan, there are some incredibly creative content people on TikTok.
Right.
And I've even seen recruiters now use it and businesses use it too, because it's a great way to advertise that advertising. But I would say 80% of it is just nonsense. I watched one, my son showed me, which was a reactor reacting to a reactor, reacting to a reactor, reacting to a reactor. And I was like, that's insane. And of course, one of my friends, James Hurley, is a pretty well-known reactor. He used to have James Universe channel with over 100,000 subscribers. I never understood the reaction thing, because I don't want to watch you react to the trailer. I want to watch the trailer. So
your dog is very confused by that. He's like, what?
He just
blew my mind.
He disagrees.
I don't understand what's going on here. What world do I live in? So. He agrees. And I agree. I mean, there is I don't do reaction videos because I'm just like, I feel like it's just too much time wasted for me. You know, like I've got enough stuff and like,
I just don't understand it. But, you know, John, I can't make fun of these content creators, because if you can get 1 million views by showing your cat running around a kitchen,
mm-hmm.
by God, go do it. But I just am afraid that what's happening is we're conditioning people to want that type of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're not going to get the quality of a Scorsese film or mm-hmm. of a Stanley Kubrick film. You're not. And it's funny, because the movies are getting longer and the TikToks are shorter. And people think that's going to work. The new Batman movie is what, almost 3 hours? My movie's almost 3 hours. Oof. So that's a lot. Yeah, it's a long time to watch a film. But if you look, Spider-Man 2:45? It was like 2:30, 2:45 runtime.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, they're getting longer because you need so much time to tell the story. But I'm waiting for those two things to collide.
I think Doctor Strange is 2.5 hours is what they're clocking in at, but that might even change, because I think they did some reshoots on it.
Yeah, they're still, according to Sam Raimi, he doesn't even know when the film's done. It's supposed to be done in May.
Yeah, well, hopefully, because I don't like these getting pushed back, because the problem being with what they're doing is once one gets pushed back, all of them get pushed back they can't... because they all tie into each other.
Morbius is a prime example. The reason why everyone thought they were pushing it back, because Sony wanted Spider-Man to get a couple more weeks of play. But the reality is they're probably doing something with Andrew Garfield to extend the universe and doing some reshirts. Yeah. Because now you can't help but watch that Sony film and realize you want to make this a success. You got to make them ensemble pictures.
I bet they were shocked, because Amazing Spider-Man 2 did not do very well. In fact, I don't even own it. I own the first one. I need to buy that one. Not because he didn't change my opinion on the movie. I just like to collect all the stuff. The movie was not good. It had some problems, but now everybody's an Andrew Garfield fan. And I think it took that movie being bad and some time away from that bad mm-hmm. movie yep. to show the world that like they really do miss him, you know, him as Spider-Man.
And he was a very good Spider-Man. The first movie was very good. I love Tobey Maguire for both his movies. Hated the third one.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think it gave them the respect they didn't get when they were actually in their films, because back then comic book films were still kind of on the fringe, and mm-hmm. now they dominate to a point where you have major directors like babies crying like, oh, they're terrible. Listen, that's what the audience wants. You give them what they want. You can still make, films like The Irishman mm-hmm. and so forth. It doesn't matter. But, Spider-Man No Way Home is not taking away from The Irishman.
Right.
People want to watch that movie are going to watch that movie. People who want to watch Spider-Man and watch Spider-Man. It's not taking away from the audience.
It's really funny that like the newest person to say something about Marvel, which seems to be the thing, is like, let's diss Marvel. but the was the Roland Emmerich, who I look, I love Independence Day. One of my favorite like guilty pleasure type movies, you know, like it's I don't even call guilty pleasures anymore, because I actually don't feel guilty.
Everything's a guilty pleasure anymore.
I know, right? Like I enjoy it. I just think it was fun. The thing is, Roland Emmerich makes a specific type of movie, you know, a movie that costs millions and millions of dollars. Usually it's a disaster pick, you know, and usually does very well because it's brainless, you know.
Yeah,
he'd be perfect for a Marvel movie, honestly.
How somebody could make Independence Day, which he was mocked for that.
Uh-huh.
Back when that came out, because it was all about the big blockbuster science fiction movies, and as you said, disaster movies. How you can now make fun of Marvel or pick at Marvel for doing the same thing you did, just in a different package, is insane to me. It's just bitterness. It's jealousy. And
yes,
like you
jealousy.
Said, Roland,
I was just thinking that too.
If you want to do something, make a superhero film. If not, keep making the films you make. I mean, Moonfall apparently is doing very well. It's a ridiculous concept, but so is Armageddon. I like those kind of movies. I don't go there because I'm trying to get a science lesson. I go there because it's this idea that the moon is going to crash into the earth. And that's kind of cool to me, but I'm not going to say that that's going to take over modern media now. You know, I mean, people have preferences, you know, they, you know, and again, people who go see Moonfall are not going to go see the chick flick that's down the road, you know, because that's their preference. The reason why I pick on stuff like TikTok and stuff is not so much the entity itself, but it's the content. So in other words, if you're making short things that are meaningless and people are conditioned to that, and that's all they're seeing, it's almost like Pavlov's dog, where with back in the day, you could go see a science fiction film, you go see a romantic comedy, you go see, you know, you could pick and choose what you wanted to watch. But with the younger generation coming up, because they're watching these 1.5, 2 minute segments, I think it's conditioning them to lose track of what something of quality would be, you know?
True. And also attention span, like our attention spans gotten worse, you know? Yeah. And me too. Like I've always had like ADHD, but like, I think like I feel like the world is sort of telling people, like, you know, it's YouTube, you know, and we do Indie Film Cafe, and we do, you know, other shows like What the Fuck Friday and stuff like that, where we review, you know, movies that are just a little crazier. And sometimes we get those movies that are like, we do a review for like an hour long, you know, and I see all these YouTubers who do stuff for like 10 minutes. And that's it. You can't review a movie for 10 minutes and that's it, like all the time. No. You know, you have to give like a real in-depth review of something, because otherwise you're just saying, it sucked, or it was great, or whatever.
No depth. Yeah. When we made Dusk, when we did a research, if you watch the episodes on YouTube, they're not more than 11 to 15 minutes, because we realized that when we got longer, people turned it off.
Oh, wow.
And that's sad, because I'm forced now as a writer, it helps you to, you know, fine tune your talent, which is good, hone your writing skill.
Mm-hmm.
But you might want to tell that story in 30 minutes. There might be enough meat to that bone for 30 minutes, but, you know, you can't, because once you cross a certain, you know, threshold of time, you lose interest. When I was publishing my books, the reason why my books didn't end up in the bookstore, I was told, was because they were too thick. And for one of my books, they could put 4 smaller books on the shelf. So it all plays, and it's all an evolution of TikTok. And I'm not trying to pick on TikTok. I know I'm going to get haters about that. And like I said, there is creative content on TikTok. But what I'm trying to say is piggybacking on what you're talking about, that attention deficit, when you're forcing people to put things in a smaller box, you're not going to get the same quality of what you might be able to get a bigger box. Now, mind you, sometimes the box is too big. Like, you don't need a 4-hour epic film. The Hobbit stories are a prime example, not the Lord of the Rings, but the Hobbits. Too long. They could have been, they could have been streamlined, could have been edited better, etc. But for the most part, if I'm making a show that's 11 minutes, not because I want to tell an 11 minute story, but because if I don't, I'm going to lose viewership because people lose their attention. And I can't tell that story in 11 minutes because I don't want to compromise character development. I don't want to compromise story. I don't want to compromise the chronology of what I'm going to create. That's kind of a tough place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're moving away from episodic and doing the movies, because I can tell the complete story in a 90 minute movie or a 2 hour movie and do it right, as opposed to worrying about, well, if I put it out on YouTube for 11 minutes and it goes to 12, people are going to turn off. So, yeah. I mean, I've seen videos after the first 30 seconds. I think that's what YouTube gauges off. I think it's 30 or 45 seconds. I think that's when you get the view. They have to get past a certain point. And it's really frustrating when you see how many people just watch 45 seconds to a minute of your movie, then turn it off. Well, you know, but yet again, a cat video, you know, will get a million views, you know?
Well, so. No, but like, it's weird because we do live in a freaking world where people will watch freaking binge watch television. So It's there. It is there. It's just, you know, maybe it really does just have to grab you enough to like make you want to stay focused on it. Right. And it's hard.
Well, you have to look at the demographics of who's watching, who's binge watching. And then you think about this generation coming up, who's being conditioned to watch minute to minute videos. Are they going to be the binge watch of the future? Or is that going to change the landscape again? Well, you're not going to have that. I don't know if you noticed, and you probably have, I used to love the fact that you could watch an entire season like Stranger Things in one sitting, or Daredevil. I hate the fact that we're back in the thing where I have to wait week to week.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, for a couple reasons. One, I want to be able to watch it at my leisure. I don't want to have to wait anymore. And that's, again, I'm complaining about the TikTok generation, and I'm being the microwave generation where I need it now. But also with spoilers. You have to avoid social media for an entire, if you don't happen to watch it that day, you got to watch out, you know, for spoilers. Now, mind you, someone could argue, well, if you binge watch it, somebody could spoil the whole show. They're right. But I just like having it all at one shot. I grew up with the week to week thing you did with the step by step and the full house and having to wait a week for each episode. I like the idea of being able to binge watch an entire season, but maybe that's my conditioning. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's the thing. Maybe I was always conditioned to watch week to week. So it's sort of that excitement of doing it. Like Boba Fett. People keep talking about Boba Fett, and I haven't watched it because I've been waiting. A friend of mine and I are watching it. And of course, people are spoiling it from like the, you know, from their titles on Facebook. Yeah. And it drives me nuts. And I'm like, dudes, if you're going to do spoilers, do it at the bottom of your fucking thing. Like, so I don't see it, because now it's just, you know, it's like, oh my God, this happened, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I'm like,
I actually avoid, I've got to a point where I watch the shows early in the morning when I get up. It's part of my morning routine. But if I don't watch the shows, I stay off social media until I watch it, because I know it's going to get spoiled. But again, it's kind of a contradictory point, because if you do the series all at one shot, somebody can spoil the entire series as opposed to just one episode. So I guess there's both sides of the coin on that. But I just know I really enjoyed that format, because growing up with week to week, it was nice to have it accessible completely. Again, and I'm also contradicting my point about the Star Wars movies, where half the fun of was waiting for them to come out. But you know, it was just cool to be able to binge watch those series. And yeah, I guess you could still do it if you decide not to watch them for, you know, a month, and then you catch up. But
it just reminds me of what Simpsons, where they're like back in 1970 or 1981 or whatever, and they're coming out of the Empire Strikes Back going, man, I can't believe that Luke was or that Vader was Luke's father. And everybody's like, oh man, why? Yeah. We're waiting in line here.
I actually saw a kid get beat up for that coming out of the theater. I didn't actually hear what he said. I found out later from a friend of mine that he had come out and said it, and a couple of guys took him to task on it. So,
I mean, isn't that messed up? It's messed up. Don't spoil shit. You know?
It is. It's just juvenile. It really is juvenile. I understand. I mean, I think there needs to be a certain cutoff. I mean, you know, after a week, if you haven't seen something, that's on you. But right. the next day, two or three days after, give people a chance to watch it.
Oh yeah,
you
know? Everybody's saying it the same day they watch it. Like they want to tell their piece yeah. about whatever movie, TV show that they have. And you look, you know, this is why I love Facebook, because I love seeing all my friends so excited about the TV shows and movies that they yeah. watch. You know, and because I get excited like that too, so I love it. I don't. Yeah, like you, I don't love spoilers. But I don't do spoilers. Like when I saw Spider-Man No Way Home, I did not go, oh my God, you know, because I don't want to be deleted from people's lives, because like seriously, that's a deletable offense to me.
Yeah.
But plus I don't want to be a dick. Like, I mean, like let people get a chance to watch it. I watched it the first day. Somebody did sort of spoil something by accident on a comment. Well, it was an accident to him probably, but I read it by accident, you know, because yeah. I don't know why I do this shit. I just sometimes will. It's like I'm not trying, but I end up fucking it up. But like I, you know, that's the thing. Like you watch that movie, you go on Facebook and say, I had a really good time watching that movie.
Yeah.
That's all you need. Yep, you don't need to now wait 3 months. You know, like this is going to be out in March. So by March, if you haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home and you're listening to this podcast, I'm sorry, but you should have known.
At that point. Yeah. But it shows you how bad it's got to a point where Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire are literally lying better than politicians, because they know that it's so rampant, the spoiling of things, and there's no way you could escape it. And what's even more upsetting, Jonathan, is it's not just people spoiling it, but there's major recognizable podcasts, blogs, and so forth that are spoiling it. News media, comicbook.com is one of the worst ones that spoil stuff constantly.
Right.
And again, it doesn't just go to it's in the article, it's in the title of what they're putting out. So yeah, it's frustrating, but I mean, it's part and part. Oh. It's just going to get worse. It's not going to get better. The more social media evolves.
Marvel is trying their hardest to lock that down, because there are.
They've done a good job for a good portion.
They did. And now it's gotten a little out of hand, because there's literally a guy, something RPK or whatever, who like has a, what is it? A Patreon. And if you're a patron of his, he will give you spoilers, you know, up and everything like that he's heard from industry insiders. And then he'll go on Twitter and actually still tell people, like, you know, industry insiders say that, you know, Tom Cruise, you know, blah, 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 you know, whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, I'm sure you've heard that rumor and yeah. all that stuff. So it's not new. It's like a rumor that's been going around.
It was going on around way before when Iron Man was coming to an end. They had that rumor. So that rumor's been going probably for
so it a might good not year be, or more. I don't think it's going to happen. Some people have
I
said,
hope not.
I hope not, too. I don't care. If it happens, I don't mind Tom Cruise. I know he's in a stupid cult, but I will say that, like, I don't care. I'm never going to join that stupid thing. But I don't think that's, you know, I don't blame him as an actor. Cause I love Top Gun. I love all his old stuff.
Oh no, his old stuff was, I mean, people can crap on him all he wants, but there was a time when he was the bomb, and people loved his movies, and now he's kind of outdated, the Scientology thing. But I mean, I get the idea of having superior Iron Man. Mm-hmm. It's a cool idea, but the thing is, Robert Downey Jr. basically brought the Marvel Universe into existence with Jon Favreau. And I think the reason why people are so against it is because for them, there's only one Iron Man. That's Robert Downey.
Well, yeah, here's my, that's the thing. So he like auditioned you know, Tom Cruise auditioned, which not many actors are asked to audition unless, you know what I mean? Like that. And he actually did it. Like a lot of times you don't ask him to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Tom Cruise, like you just give him the role kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But he auditioned for it and he didn't get it because Robert Downey Jr. was just more what they were looking for.
Yep.
And, you know, had it not been so successful, maybe they would have been kicking themselves and maybe we should have gone with Tom Cruise, but it was very successful. And I think that is mainly because it wasn't Tom Cruise at the time, because Tom Cruise at the time, like, he might have been like up on the top tier, but that would have been the problem, is he would have cost so much, you know, certain money. And then I don't think
people could have disassociated. It's like Will Smith.
Yeah.
Every character Will Smith plays is Will Smith. Every character that Tom Cruise plays is Tom Cruise. The one thing that Marvel has done incredibly well is casting.
Right.
And so they have matched up characters so well. I know I'm going to hate for this, except for Brie Larson. I just don't think she was the right character to play Captain Marvel. I don't think as a person, she's a very nice person. I don't think she's a great actress. But besides her casting, I think every other casting decision has been incredible. And Downey was perfect. When you start bringing in big names that people recognize, it's like Josh Brolin. No one saw Josh Brolin. They saw Thanos.
Right.
No one saw Hugh Jackman. They saw Wolverine.
So you say Tom Cruise should play the Thing?
Yeah, Tom Cruise. Yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you get someone who's got such a large name and such an iconic figure that it's very difficult to put them in that without people, you know, it takes them out of the character. So I think if they brought Tom Cruise in as Superior Iron Man, I think it might be a cool concept, but I think it still would take people out of it because he's Tom Cruise.
They're the company that made freaking Vin Diesel play Groot, you know?
Yeah.
Where all his lines are, I'm Groot.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have known that was Vin Diesel unless someone told you it was Vin Diesel.
Right.
You know, had they put him in another character, like say he was, I can't remember the guy's name in Thor Ragnarok, the one who was helping Hela, the kid named.
I forgot. I know.
Carl Urban plays the character.
Yeah.
Had they had Vin Diesel play that character, everyone said, oh my God, it's Vin Diesel. It would have taken you out of it. So they've done a really good job of matching characters properly with the characters, with the actors. That's why I really believe whoever plays the next Wolverine will be an unknown, because they have to, because Hugh Jackman has owned that part. And if they bring
But Carl Urban, I thought, like when I saw
he would have made an amazing Wolverine.
He would have made an amazing, but he already had his role, and they don't cast twice, you know, unless it's
only
a variant.
They've only done, yeah, they did it with Blade. Because Cottonmouth is going to play Blade, and they did it with a minor character, but you're right. And I don't think they should. Carl Urban would have made a great Wolverine. That time has passed, but he would have been amazing as Wolverine.
Right. Let's talk about that real quick. Jesus, we're talking about Marvel, but sorry, not your films. But yeah, I guess we're both big, huge Marvel fans. So, you know, it makes sense. But like, you know, the Cottonmouth thing is what I started arguing with people about, because now we've got the Netflix stuff happening. So Daredevil, Kingpin are coming. So most likely Foggy and Karen Page are going to be coming, most likely coming back as, if they're going to say that this is the Netflix Marvel, they can't recast those parts. That would just make no sense.
Right.
But they can recast Jessica Jones, because, you know, or recast.
I hope not.
I hope not, but there's talks about her being recast potentially, like rumors or whatever that most likely she's going to be recast. So it might happen. I hope not, because I love Kristen Ritter, but then
maybe
then
Tom
again,
Cruise.
It would be what?
Maybe Tom Cruise will play Jessica Jones.
Well, I mean, you know, he's played crazier roles. But no, so yeah, so, you know, whatever. Kristen Ritter may not come back, which would mean most likely Luke Cage wouldn't come back. So it'd be a different Luke Cage. I really hope it's a different Iron Fist anyway.
Absolutely. Hands down.
Everybody does. Everybody does. And no offense to the guy who played him, you know,
it was miscast. I said Brie Larson, but that was the other miscast. He just wasn't right for the role. I don't know what kind of actor he is. I haven't seen anything else, but whether it was the script or him or a combination of the two, he wasn't the right person for that role.
Right. And so, and I liked Luke Cage, like, honestly, I liked him, but
he's phenomenal.
If the guy who plays Cottonmouth is going to play Blade, he can't be, there can't be that Luke Cage.
It can be, because the fortunate thing is Cottonmouth died, and if they make them look different, it can work. I don't think you have to have that much continuity. I do think that they had a really good casting with Luke Cage, but they could, I don't know what the status of the actors are in negotiation. I think if they would have cast anybody else but Charlie Cox as Daredevil, it would have been a riot. You're right. I mean, they could. I think they made the right choice for Blade with Marcella. I think he's a phenomenal actor. I hated what they did with Cottonmouth and Luke Cage. I wish that he would have survived to the end of the series. I thought killing him off so quickly was a terrible thing. But I think it was a smart move to do it. And I think, you know, that'll be there. But I think he's going to look so different that I don't think it's going to be as recognizable. You know,
I agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm on board with your idea if they kind of make him look open. And have they showed anything with Blade?
No.
I don't think they have. So they don't, we don't even know what he is. But all we've heard is his voice at the end of Eternals. So.
Which was interesting because he's never interacted with the Black Knight. So that's interesting they decided to put it
there. They will when they create the whole Midnight Suns.
I don't think the Black Knight was part of Midnight Suns.
But he probably will be in the MCU, I know, but
it's an interesting way to introduce Blade, because you would think Ghost Rider or you'd think something else, but or WandaVision. It's just interesting that they chose Black Knight. So.
Well, interesting. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what they do with everything. They I will say one thing, they know what they're fucking doing. And long as Kevin Feige stays in the company for 30 more years or whatever, you know what I mean? Like at least 20 more years. Well, it'll be interesting. Cause I think they have years and years already planned out of what
You've got Favreau in the mix, and Favreau's been an absolute genius. So as long as Kathleen Kennedy stays out of it, it'll be okay. If they get her involved, it's going to be a disaster.
Already was it Kathleen Kennedy and Kevin Feige already when they're talking, because he dropped out of the Star Wars thing, if I'm correct, you know. So
he was smart, because that thing was, that was a train wreck, no matter who was conducting it. It was just a train wreck.
So, all right. So last thing we'll talk about before we actually mention more stuff of yours and kind of conclude. But I do want to mention that, because you are a big Star Wars fan too, right? You love this stuff. A lot of people say this, and I mean, I hate saying this because this is going to sound awful, because look, Kathleen Kennedy, I don't hate on her. You know, I think what she did was sort of inadvertently kind of destroyed
Inadvertent. One movie's inadvertent, three movies. That's deliberate.
She kind of really fucked that up badly. And so then she's, you know, but she hasn't really been part of the shows. Those have been Dave and Don.
As soon as they moved her out of the equation, you know, so everything got better.
Yeah. So now I think, and she's signed off for at least four more years or something. Which I'm like, wouldn't that be the time you guys kick her out? Like say, oh,
well, I think that's just symbolic, because I think they were concerned if they fired her, there would be a tremendous pushback because of the SJW movement and all that and cancel culture. So I think it was smart to keep around as kind of a figurehead. But as long as she doesn't touch anything David Filoni's working on or Jon Favreau's working on, it'll be fine.
Well, yeah. And then she's got her own shows that are going to...
They're all getting canceled.
Are they already?
She had several projects that aren't going to happen. I mean, we know Obi-Wan's coming out. That's not... I know she was part of it, but it's being taken over by someone else, which I'm glad. So I think she's pretty much out of the mix.
Okay. I know there was SWJ, you know, social warrior, justice warrior, whatever, SJW kind of shit. I don't know. Cause I don't really,
they want to do a lot of that. And listen, I disagree with the hate towards Rey, because Luke Skywalker learned the Force in one movie. Rey knowing the Force in one movie was not a stretch. I mean, Luke literally blew up a Death Star using the Force, never was trained. I think it could have been a really good story with her as the main character. I like the actress. I just think that the rest of it was a mess. Like they and Poe was boring. The other guy was boring. They made a mockery of the legacy characters. It just was a terrible, and then The Last Jedi is probably one of the worst movies ever made. That Bronco chase of a movie, in my age group. It just was stupid. It was, and I appreciate what they tried to do with The Rise of Skywalker because it was a salvage mission, but you can't salvage. The Last Jedi was unsalvageable. It's just an unsalvageable movie. So
my dad fell asleep watching that movie, and my dad, the Last Jedi, and he said he's never fallen asleep in a Star Wars movie ever.
Yeah,
you know, he won't watch Rise of Skywalker because of that movie, and that sucks. You know, and the problem is Rian Johnson is a really good director. He's fantastic. Yeah. Like, you give him original fucking material like Knives Out and you've got fucking a fantastic director. You give him something like this and he's just like,
I don't know what, I wonder how much, because Kathleen Kennedy basically gutted Solo, and Solo was a good movie. I don't care what anybody says, Solo was a good movie. I wonder how much she had a hand in, because Force Awakens was not bad. It mixed nostalgia with the new.
JJ should have just, why didn't they just keep JJ on the whole thing?
They tried to do what they did with Star Wars Empire and Return of Jedi. They should have kept the same director, built the continuity.
I mean, I hate to say they should have done the prequels, you know, like the prequels just had George, you know.
Yep.
Fuck, dude, just bring George back. Why not even bring the original fucking director back? Like, you know. I think it's mainly because she wanted to control everything. So
yeah, no, that's what it was. And it's a shame because Kathleen Kennedy wasn't always like that. I mean, she brought us Jurassic Park. She brought us some really good films.
Of the other people. She
was a producer. She bought into the SJW stuff and that's why. And the cancel culture stuff and making everything sanitized. And that's why, you know, when you have a changing Boba Fett's ship name because it's got the word slave in it. When that happened, I felt like I was going to have an aneurysm. That's not what, it has nothing to do with slavery. It has nothing to do with the Civil War. It's called Slave One because Slave One, give me a break. I mean, for generations that grew up on Family Guy and South Park, I can't believe how easily offended we are anymore. I really can't.
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't go watch independent films then because there's lots of, you know, whatever. And you know what? God bless indie film. Yeah. I just want to thank you so much. And I want to mention, because we talked about, but The Devil's Daughter is out on YouTube. Everybody can check it out, right? As you know, out there and everything. You said it's like over 3 hours long, which is great.
It's 2:57.
Oh, almost 3 hours.
Yeah, it has two end credit scenes and so forth. It's also available on Amazon Fire Stick.
Oh, nice.
Through the Dominus TV app. They can look up Dominus TV and get that app for free, and they can watch not only that, but they can watch the Dust series on Fire Stick as well.
Oh, very cool. So go ahead, everybody who's got an Amazon. I had a Fire TV. I don't know if you saw my post about it, but it's dead. So
sorry.
It's okay. It lasted 4 years or so. So it's sadly, it's just like our attention span doesn't last as long as, you know, technology, man. This doesn't last as long these days. You know, they want you to buy a new one.
Quantity over quality.
Yeah, but I'm happy. I'll eventually get a new TV. I've still got other TVs in the house, so you know, just not in my room, so it's okay. So everybody check it out, Amazon Fire, and Dusk, and Devil's Daughter. And I'm so excited for all the other stuff that you've got going on. The three film, the trilogy that you're working on sounds amazing. I can't wait for you guys to start shooting. We'll promote it. We'll help get it out there some more if we can, you know, because we love indie film out here. We love people who go out and make their own fucking universes.
Yeah.
Because that's the way indie film should be. You know, if that's what you want to do, do it. You know,
yep.
Some people don't like universes and stuff, and they're like, oh, I'm sick of it. And I'm like, well, then don't watch it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
I mean, you don't have to complain about it, you know, like,
yep.
You know, I don't complain that I don't like, you know, what is it? The Howard's End all the time, you know, I'm not a big fan of that movie, but that doesn't necessarily mean that my buddy Paul, who co-hosts this stuff, doesn't love it because he loves it, you know, and stuff. And I'm just not for me, you know.
Yeah.
So there you go. But thank you so much. And I'm really excited for everything you're doing, dude. I'll leave links down below so people can check out your films.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And we'll have you back on sometime, maybe next year after you've wrapped your thing. Maybe we'll have you come return and
yeah, talk about a lot more to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right, man. Have a good one, dude.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye.
Bye.